This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Genesis. Today, Pastor Sandy will be teaching through the book of Genesis, chapters 46 through 50.
I'm sure in his mind he was recalling God's grace toward him. Jacob was appreciative. He too was the younger son, yet he was blessed above his older brother Esau. You know, one of the peculiarities of all three Hebrew patriarchs is that the custom of the firstborn was violated in their families. Abraham honored Isaac, not Ishmael. Isaac blessed Jacob over Esau, and now Jacob blessed Ephraim over Manasseh. Hey, it's God's way of saying that his favor is not awarded according to natural advantage or man's endowment or through any earthly custom and tradition. God's favor is always awarded by grace through faith. Hey, God's blessing doesn't go to the folks we might expect. If you're the run of the litter, if you feel unwanted and looked over and unqualified, then take heart. God crosses his hands at the cross of Jesus, and through his sacrifice, he bestows the greatest blessings on the least deserving. Well, verse 21 tells us, "Then Israel said to Joseph, 'Behold, I am dying, but God will be with you and bring you back to the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to you one portion above your brothers, which I took from the hand of the Amorite with my sword and my bow.'" In essence, Israel's blessing on his grandsons, Ephraim and Manasseh, doubles Joseph's share of the family honor. It's another coat of many colors. It was a special gift from Jacob to his favorite son, Joseph. But in chapter 49, Jacob blesses all 12 of his sons. He's in the spirit now, peering into the future, prophesying over each son. Some of his words here in chapter 49, though, are more curses than blessings. Jacob will dole out some blessings, but he'll also pass along a few tough pills to swallow. Notice verse 1. "And Jacob called his sons and said, 'Gather together that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days. Gather together and hear, you sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel, your father.'" Jacob is on his deathbed now, and all his sons have gathered around him. His bedroom is about to become a courtroom. He begins with the oldest, Reuben. "You are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, you shall not excel." Remember, water always flows to the lowest point, and this was Reuben's spiritual history. Rather than rise up spiritually, Reuben always gravitated to the lowest point morally. "Because you went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it. He went up to my couch." Jacob mentions an example here of Reuben's spiritual character. In Genesis 35, verse 22, we're told that Reuben had committed incest with one of Jacob's concubines. It was a sin that cost him dearly. He forfeited his rights as the firstborn. He will not excel. Reuben ends up not even entering the promised land. His tribe settled for a spot east of the Jordan River, where the first tribe, and they were ended up becoming the first tribe scattered by the Assyrians. Years later, verse 5, "Simeon and Levi are brothers, instruments of cruelty are in their dwelling place." Remember, these were the lead guys in the brutal slaughter of the men of Shechem in chapter 34. He goes on and talks about them. "Let not my soul enter their council. Let not my honor be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel." The Levites were the priestly tribe. Rather than land, they were given cities scattered throughout the other tribes. Simeon also ended up blending in with the tribe of Judah. Notice verse 8, "Judah, you are he whom your brothers shall praise." The word Judah means praise. "Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you." Judah will receive the birthright. You see, Judah becomes the royal line, and he receives the preeminent place in the family. He explains it next. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He bows down. He lies down as a lion. And as a lion, who shall rouse him? Judah becomes depicted as a lion. And it's from this idiom that Messiah gets his nickname, the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. Jesus descended from this tribe of Judah. Notice verse 10 records a fascinating prophecy. Genesis 49, verse 10. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people. This word Shiloh, it means he whose right it is. Since the ultimate right to the throne of God's kingdom belongs to the Messiah, the rabbis always took Shiloh to be another name for Messiah. This prophecy says that the scepter, or the right to self-rule, which was commonly associated with the right to capital punishment, would not pass from the kingdom of Judah until the Messiah had come. This is why the rabbis in Jerusalem wept. In 19 AD, the Romans stripped them of their right to capital punishment. This is why later the Sanhedrin had to seek Pilate's approval to execute Jesus. It was in AD 19 when the edict was issued by the Roman authority that the Jews could no longer exercise this special right. The Jewish people were crestfallen. They knew that they no longer ruled themselves. The Babylonian Talmud records their remorse. Woe unto us, for the scepter has been taken from Judah. And obviously the prophetic consequences, and the Messiah has not appeared. You see, in the rabbis' minds, the scepter had passed from Judah. Their right to rule was gone, and Messiah had not come, as the prophecy here in Genesis 49 had promised. According to them, in their hearts, God's prophecy had failed. But what they didn't realize is that Shiloh had come. God's prophecy hadn't failed. Genesis 49 had come true, for at that very moment, Shiloh, or the Messiah, was working in a carpenter shop in Nazareth. Jesus was serving his apprentice under his father Joseph. Well, the prophecy continues. Binding his donkey to the vine and his donkey's colt to the grapevine, he washed his garments in wine and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine and his teeth whiter than milk. Verse 13, Zebulun shall dwell by the haven of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships, and his border shall adjoin Sidon. In Old Testament times, Zebulun was landlocked. This seems to be a prophecy here for the last days. He says in verse 14 and 15, he looks toward Issachar. He says, Issachar is a strong donkey, lying down between two burdens. He saw that rest was good and that the land was pleasant. He bowed his shoulder to bear a burden and became a band of slaves. Well, I'm sure you've heard of the Georgia Bulldogs and the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. Well, here are the Issachar strong donkeys. The tribe of Issachar was strong. They were endowed with numbers and resources. They had great potential. When Israel returns to the land, it should be easy for Issachar to drive out the Canaanites, but in the end, they became a band of slaves. The strong donkeys had a problem. They were lazy. Jacob sees them lying by the load rather than lifting the load. You know, one of the potential problems we face in the Christian life is laziness. We need to realize that we can't do God's part, but God won't do our part. As we've learned from the patriarchs of Israel, our part in our covenant with God is faith. But faith isn't passive, it's active. Faith requires effort and diligence. To grow in faith, you have to apply yourself to God's word and apply God's word to your life. Renewing the mind requires a concerted effort to replace old ideas with new truth. It takes a little brain drain to rethink unbiblical assumptions and change the way you approach certain situations. Christian life takes effort. Hey, lazy believers wind up like the Issachar strong donkeys, a band of slaves. It's been said, laziness grows on people. It begins in cobwebs and it ends in iron chains. If you don't work at shaking off sin, it will ensnare you. Notice verse 16. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent by the way, a viper by the path that bites the horse's heels so that its rider shall fall backward. I have waited for your salvation, O Lord. Dan is like a poisonous snake. He's the tribe that bites Israel and injects the venom of idolatry. One of the two golden calves that later contaminated Israel was set up in Dan. He says, Gad, a troop, shall tramp upon him, but he shall triumph at last. The tribe of Gad is like an army. He will prevail. The tribe of Gad is the tribe that supplied troops for David. Bread from Asher shall be rich. Asher was the land below Mount Carmel. Even today it remains fertile farmland. We're told, and he shall yield royal dainties. Or literally, he will dip his foot in blood. Today the port city of Haifa is in the borders of Asher and is the terminal point for the pipelines that bring petroleum to Israel. He says of Naphtali, you're like a deer let loose. He uses beautiful words. Naphtali bordered on the Sea of Galilee, where Jesus did most of his teaching. Thus, the beautiful words. Verse 22, Joseph is a fruitful bow by a well. His branches run over the wall. In other words, he's prosperous. He's like a bulging cluster of grapes. Ephraim and Manasseh will become two of the most populous tribes in Israel, the sons of Joseph. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, and hated him. For the first 30 years, that was the story of Joseph's life. He was hated. But his bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. By the God of your father who will help you, and by the Almighty who will bless you with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the breasts and of the womb. The blessings of your father have excelled the blessings of my ancestors up to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him who was separate from his brothers. Joseph will be fruitful. He'll be strong. He'll be blessed by God. Notice verse 27. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall devour the spoil. Now here's good advice. Don't let your daughter date a Benjamite. Benjamin was Joseph's brother, but his ancestors were like wolves. The cruelty of the Benjamites is documented in Judges chapters 19 and 20. Verse 28. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father spoke to them. And he blessed them. He blessed each one according to his own blessing. Then he charged them and said to them, I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite as a possession for a burial place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And there I buried Leah. The field and the cave that is there were purchased from the sons of Heth. And when Jacob had finished commanding his sons, he drew his feet up into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. Notice the reference there to life after death. His people were still alive. They were dead, but they were on the other side of the grave, still alive in the afterlife. Chapter 50 of Genesis. Then Joseph fell on his father's face and wept over him and kissed him. And Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father. So the physicians embalmed Israel. The Egyptians were famous for the embalming process they invented, known as mummification. And here's how it works. First, the brains were removed by a crooked wire inserted through the nose. Second, an incision in the flank allowed for the removal of the vital organs. Third, the body was washed outside with water and inside with palm wine. Fourth, the head and the person's abdominal cavities were stuffed with myrrh, cinnamon, and other aromatic spices. Fifth, the body was soaked for 40 days in a solution of salt water. Sixth, the body was then wrapped with strips of cloth, sometimes 700 feet long. The strips were smeared with gum and cooked onto the body with extreme heat. Seventh, cloth layers plastered on the inside with lime were wrapped around the body, forming a hard encasement. A mask was made to resemble the face. I suppose you could say Jacob was a daddy who became a mummy. Verse 3, 40 days were required for him, for such are the days required for those who are embalmed, and the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. Here we're told they mourned for Jacob 70 days. That's over 2 months. I've always thought it cruel that we mourn 2 or 3 days for a loved one, and then we're expected to go back to work and pick up as if nothing had happened. Life goes on. But I don't think God designed the human heart to heal in a matter of just 2 or 3 days. Yes, life goes on, but sometimes we can't. Until we take time to mourn and to purge ourselves of our grief, we need to have time to turn loose of the person we love. It's interesting to me, they mourned for Jacob a full 7 weeks. I think sometimes we need longer than 2 or 3 days. Notice verse 4 of chapter 50. And when the days of his mourning were past, Joseph spoke to the household of Pharaoh, saying, "If now I have found favor in your eyes, please speak in the hearing of Pharaoh, saying, 'My father made me swear, saying, behold, I am dying. In my grave, which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan, there you shall bury me. Now, therefore, please let me go up and bury my father, and I will come back.' And Pharaoh said, 'Go up and bury your father, as he has made you swear.'" Joseph has a promise to keep, to bury his dead next to Leah. And so Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went up all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house and all the elders of the land of Egypt, as well as all the house of Joseph, his brothers and his father's house. Only their little ones, their flocks and their herds, they left in the land of Goshen. And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen, and it was a very great gathering. I mean, Joseph arranges a state funeral with a full military escort. Verse 10. Then they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond the Jordan, and they mourned there with a great and very solemn lamentation. He observed 7 days of mourning for his father. And when the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning at the threshing floor of Atad, they said, "This is a deep mourning of the Egyptians." Therefore, its name was called Abel Mizraim, which is beyond the Jordan, or literally, mourning of Egypt. And so his sons did for him just as he had commanded them. For his sons carried him to the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, which Abraham bought with the field from Ephron the Hittite as property for burial place. And after he had buried his father, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers and all who went with him to bury his father. Verse 15. Now when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "Perhaps Joseph will hate us and may actually repay us for all the evil which we did to him." Wow, with Jacob's death, Joseph's brothers, they get worried. I mean, maybe the only reason Joseph was being nice to us was for dad's sake. Is he about to grow fangs? And so they sent messengers to Joseph saying, "Before your father died, he commanded, saying, 'Thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now please, forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father.' And Joseph wept when they spoke to him." You know, it probably broke Joseph's heart that they didn't trust him. They assumed that Joseph would turn on them the way that they had turned on him. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, "Behold, we are your servants." Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day, to save many people alive. Now, therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. Wow. Always remember, the key to overcoming bitterness is a strong trust in the providence of God. From the pit to Potiphar's to the prison, at any point, God could have stepped in and rescued Joseph from his troublesome situations, but he didn't. Here's another P to add to Joseph's list of P's: perfecting. For this was God's purpose. God's purpose was not only to position Joseph's career, but to perfect his character. God uses our circumstances to position us and to perfect us. His concern is both where we need to be, but also what we need to be. Verse 22. So Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years. Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. The children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were also brought up on Joseph's knees. And Joseph said to his brethren, "I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land of which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, "God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here." Joseph makes the same request as his dad. He wants his bones returned to the land that God promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And we'll read later in Exodus 13, verse 19, 300 years later, Moses and the Hebrews comply with his request and exit Egypt with the bones of Joseph. You know, it's interesting, of all the exploits that could have gotten Joseph into the Bible's hall of faith, the one that's mentioned is his command concerning dim bones. Hebrews 11, verse 22, "By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones." Despite his faithfulness to God, despite his purity, despite his moral courage, his forgiving spirit, Joseph gets special mention because of his faith in God's covenant. You know, God values our purity and our courage and our devotion, but it's faith alone that makes us right with him. Notice Genesis closes, "So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt." Author John Phillips writes, "Thus ends Genesis. It begins with creation and ends with a coffin. It begins with glory and ends with a grave. It begins with the vastness of eternity and ends with the shortness of time. It begins with the living God and ends with a dead man. It begins with a blaze of brightness in heaven and ends with a box of bones in Egypt." That is the Holy Spirit's final comment in the book on the nature and tragedy of human sin. Boy, when the devil told Eve that if she ate of the fruit, "You shall not surely die," that was a lie. Boy, the wages of sin is death, physical, or the termination of our bodies, and spiritual, the separation from God, also eternal, forever in the lake of fire. Genesis ends in death, but the good news is that Exodus follows Genesis. The book of Genesis ends with Israel in Egypt, but deliverance is just around the corner. The book of Exodus begins God's wonderful plan of redemption. And God's desires for you are the same. Your deliverance is just around the corner if you look to God's Son, Jesus Christ.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, There's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.